this recording. So this is for your convenience, really, just in case you want to learn something about the things I was talking about. Fundamental tools of a scientist's workbench. What is it about? I'm going to talk about it today. Is it working? Not really. It's going to be a little bit of a problem because I'll have to walk this way a lot. Oh, sometimes it works. So, first motivation, why this seminar? Why is it in the program of the doctoral school? Then I will go over those skills. It's kind of an overview of the rest of the semester, of the remaining 9 meetings. Skills, essentially, that you need to learn in the course of your doctoral studies. Things that you should master, because it's very difficult to be a scientist without mastering these skills. So that's what this seminar is about. What I'm going to do first, and this is requiring the technical things to work. I hope it will work. If it doesn't work, I don't know. I'll send you maybe links to the movies you can watch yourself. Let me see if it works. We'll start with Horowitz. Let's see if it works, including the sounds. The sound didn't work on my other laptop for some reason. So I'm going to show you a few movies like this, just a few minutes each. I'm not going to go through all of them. The question is, what is the common theme in each of these movies? What is it? Maybe enough to get an idea of what this is about. Let me stop here and get the next one. So we have Horowitz. Here is another piece of a movie that's a Taiwanese movie, Eat, Drink, Man, Woman. I definitely recommend it if you haven't seen it. This is the opening sequence, so the first few minutes of the movie.
Thank you.
Yes, enough. It's a little cruel, of course, compared to Horowitz. But you should be able to get the idea here. Now a couple of movies taken from Japanese martial arts. Let me also get them quickly. Just a couple of them, and not for too long. Let's see. This is probably a good one. It's not completely staged, definitely, and if those younger people attacking him didn't know how to fall, what to do, there would be blood and broken bones here. It just looks so easy. Just one more, let's see, this is probably, just one more thing.
Born in 1885, Morichi Uchida was awarded the 10th grade dan for his unparalleled ability as a kendoist. He continued to practice kendo and to make insightful observations into the very essence of the sport until he collapsed in 89.
It took me 50 years to learn the basics of kendo using my body. After I turned 50, I started the real discipline. I wanted to perform kendo using my mind and spirit. When you reach 60, your lower body weakens. I used my mind to try to reverse the drawbacks. When you're 70, your whole body weakens. That's when I trained my mind to be imperturbable. With a still mind, the mirror inside you reflects the opponent's mind.
Miyamoto considers the Hachidan examination as a means of gauging his progress in training his mind.
That's okay, so I think that should be enough to answer the question. What is the common theme here? I think this is it. So what is the common theme here? What is happening here? Why did I put them together? All very, very different things. Music playing.
All those people are very good in what they do.
Yes, definitely. They are masters. The first, of course, we know Horowitz. The second, the actor is not the cook. But when they were showing the hands, they were showing hands of really a master cook. Those of you who like cooking, who cook, can appreciate it. It is really not easy to do what they were doing. I love cooking myself, and I always enjoy watching that movie. The guy knew really what he was doing. Of course, the Japanese martial arts, you could see, it looked like a game, the Aikido thing. But the guy was just so good. He used the power of the opponent against him. If they didn't know what to do, how to fall, how to twist their hands, many bones would be broken there, probably. So very good. What else is there? How do you become that good?
Only by practice.
Practice. Hard work, definitely.
Effort.
Effort, hard work. You heard in this Kendo movie that the Grandmaster became good at the age of really 60, right? 50 he was good, but he could use his mind only when he reached 60. When he reached 70, he perfected the mind because his body was weak already. I think, not in this movie, but the guy actually died in dojo, which is the training room. He was probably training every day for a few hours. A lot of work, very hard. What else is there? Can you learn it yourself? Each of these skills.
You could try, but it's going to be hard.
It's going to be hard, and it's definitely very clear in the Japanese martial arts, where you always have a teacher, sensei. You follow the teacher, you do what the teacher is telling you. What about music? Is it the same? As you will see, it's actually very similar in music also. Let me advance one slide here and try to tell you what I see here in this, the common theme. Of course, the 2 points that you brought about the people being very, very good is absolutely a very good point. Also, hard work, it's another very good point. But the most important thing is that in this learning of a difficult skill, each of these skills is difficult. Playing music so well, cooking really well, being a master chef, or doing martial arts, it's all very, very difficult. It's as difficult as science is. If you want to become a very good scientist who is creative, who is producing papers, interesting things, this is a difficult skill. And it's not very easy to learn that skill on your own. Just like in all the other disciplines, you need to learn it from other people. They call it, in English, master-apprentice model, mistrzelatnik, master-apprentice. Occasionally, I will be saying the Polish terms just in case the terms are not familiar to you. The model of master-apprentice is used in every domain that is hard to master because people are learning the easiest from other people. You can, of course, take a book and start reading books and try to learn, but it's going to be much harder than just observing other people. There's a Chinese saying, 1 hour with a wise man, a sexist society a few thousand years ago probably, 1 hour with a wise man is worth more than 10 years of reading. And there's a deep truth in it. Being around a wise person who knows how to do things will save you a lot of time because you can learn very quickly from that person. It's a powerful mechanism, and if you haven't noticed that, you definitely will. There is something that happens to all people. It's just an example. When you are young, when you are a teenager, there are things that you dislike in your parents. No, no, the parents are talking too much, they are doing something not the way you would like, etc. There is always this conflict. You don't like what the parents are doing. At the age of 30-something, typically, when you have your own children, when you are on your own, adult, you have a family, etc., very often you have this terrible feeling. You do something and then you realize, oh boy, what I just did is what I hated so much in my parents. If you haven't had this experience, I guarantee you will have it. I've had it definitely. And it means that you have learned from your parents more than you wanted to learn. There were things that you didn't like, you didn't want to learn them, but you still learned them, just because you were around them, you spent time with them. There was once a personal anecdote. I have 4 sons. My oldest son, of course, when you have a first child, you are very observant, you try to do things well. I was brushing teeth with him. I was teaching to brush teeth. He was very little, so when he came to the bathroom, to the sink, I gave him his toothbrush. I put some toothpaste on the toothbrush, and on mine also, I wanted to do the same as he does, what he does, And I usually put the toothbrush under water, like under a stream of water, to make it wet. And then I did something like this against the sink to get the excess water off. Maybe some of you do that the same. And then I noticed that my son, who couldn't really see what I was doing in the sink, he was like that, he was reaching out with his hand with the toothbrush and hitting the side of the sink. I realized then that he is observing much more than I wanted him to observe. It was a very revealing, scary experience. I promised myself never to pick my nose and do anything that I don't want my son to learn from me. These two anecdotes are telling essentially to you how strong this learning from other people is. You will learn a lot from other people. This is the fastest way of learning, but you also will learn more than you wanted. You will learn a lot just because of being around the person. This is, of course, Star Wars. This is master teaching also an apprentice, a student. The reach is not very good, but... Okay, here it is. In science, as I said, science is very similar. So in science, you also learn from other people. This is the easiest way to learn. Great scientists produce great scientists. Of course, there may be exceptions, but the exceptions are not that common. And in science, you see very often scientific genealogy. So the tree of which scientist taught which one, and then students of that scientist. Here is from a Wikipedia article, Johannes de Groot had four students, and then these students were educating other students. And here is another very important scientist, whatever he did, and you see his origin, how he learned, from whom he was learning. The same is, of course, in disciplines like music, chess playing, sports. Good trainers are very often needed to teach sports people to do their best. Okay, here is another example of the scientific genealogy. I'm going to bring it closer, maybe I can do it easier. These are three famous people, as you see, the Chadwick discovered neutron, Rutherford proton, and he was the student of Thomson, who discovered the electron. It's not an accident that they were so good, that they did something remarkable. They were observing the scientific methodology of their teachers, of their masters, and learned from them. Here is a piece of a Wikipedia article about Horwitz. You see, he was a student of Sergei Tarnovsky and Felix Blumenfeld. They were both good musicians. Maybe they didn't become as famous as Horwitz, but they were also very good. And then we have students of Horwitz. He had, it's funny, he had a total of, well, many people said they were pupils of Horwitz, but he himself claimed there were only three. But there were actually more of them. I think there were, in the article, you see that there are more, four or five. But he essentially didn't, quite a character. He didn't want to acknowledge that somebody who did not succeed was his student. Right? He only was proud of the students, of the intellectual children who achieved success. In any case, you see the genealogy. The master-apprentice model is the easiest way to learn something that is difficult. You learn how to identify problems, how to write papers, how to present, how to interact with other people, how to review, and all the other things. Of course, there are also pitfalls of that. Pitfalls, słabe strony, zasadzki, jakieś takie problemy, pitfalls. Sometimes advisors may be very good in terms of being very good researchers, very good scientists, but they may not be very good in transferring the knowledge to you, the knowledge of the other skills. Sometimes they are not very good at transferring, sometimes they don't possess those skills. It's a variety of reasons why you will not learn all of these things that you should learn. And there are no courses that teach that. If you go to any doctoral program in the world, usually there are no courses on that. At the University of Pittsburgh, where I developed this course, we actually were in an exceptional situation. There was a program for young scientists called Survival Skills and Ethics. They had like a monthly meeting, once a month, the whole day, where a lot of these topics were covered. So, inspired by that, I developed a course for our doctoral students, and I taught that course at least for 10 years, maybe even more, maybe 15 years. And this is exactly what you will get, a course that covers skills like that. There's another movie that is funny. I think we have enough time to actually play it. Let me find it quickly. I think this is the one. It was a comedy. So I hope that none of you will ever have an advisor or a mentor like that. That's not a very good relationship, as you saw. I heard some people may behave like this, but I've never encountered people like this, mentors like this, personally. So maybe I was lucky. So it's just a comedy. In every case, so everyone, you can ask your mentor, your advisor, and they will tell you who they learned from. I have a long list myself of people I learned from, and whatever I know, I learned from them. Of course, at some point you develop your own style, your things that you do, but there's a long list of people that I learned from. my advisor at Warsaw University of Technology. He moved later to Canada. I still keep in touch with him. That's one thing that you will notice. The people that you consider mentors, you usually keep touch with them for the rest of your life. It's like almost like intellectual parents. You whenever you can, you see, you visit them. Professor van der Poel, I wrote a master's thesis with him in the Netherlands, then another one with van der Hoor, unfortunately deceased already. Max Henyon, my primary advisor of my doctoral dissertation, just, I don't know, 10 years older than I, not very old when I worked with him. Indira Nair was, she was an advisor, general advisor in the department. I really liked her, and I learned a lot of small things from her that she would share with students. Herb Simon, big impact on the way I work, the way I do research. Then Granger Morgan, department chair, taught us also a lot of things in the introductory courses in the PhD program. Then there was Baruch Fischhoff, member of my PhD committee, a psychologist. I learned from him a lot too. Then Clark Glimmer, a philosopher. Later on, I worked with him. Interesting fellow. I also have very good memories of him, keep in touch. Adolf Grunbaum, a philosopher also, unfortunately deceased. He died when he was 95 or 96. Very active until the end of his life. I also learned a lot of things from him. I will be mentioning sometimes in the course, if there's an important idea I learned from any of them, I will attribute that to them. Why am I showing that? Not to show off, but to show you that typically people have a bunch of people they learned a lot from. Interestingly, there may be a few books I read also. I got ideas from books, but there are very few. Most of the things I just learned from the people, interacting with them. And my list may be actually quite long because of my character and my nature. I'm very active. I love people. I love talking to people. So I have no difficulty with sending an email to somebody saying I'd like to meet with you and talk or something, having lunch and I definitely would advise you to have the same attitude. Learn as much as possible from different people. Don't feel limited to your advisor. It's not a very good idea because from one person you will learn a lot of things, but not everything. Other people may have other interesting things for you to steal from them. An academic environment is very unique. You can steal things from people and they don't mind. They are very happy about this. It's a very interesting, very unique environment where teachers are usually proud when somebody learns from them. They are proud of other people's successes. So this seminar is going to be about the skills that you need to learn in the course of your PhD program. The earlier you learn them, the better. And there is really no way around them. As you will see, the list of things, I'll talk about each of them in detail. There is really no way around them. You need to know how to do these things. First, I will review the skills. I have a list of 18 of them. There may be 20 or 22. I don't know. I just didn't get them on the list. Most people have a list of 10, list of 7 most important, etc., etc. I came up with 18, and I don't think I could remove any of them. And I didn't have any idea of a 19th, but there may be 19 also. So they are, I learned that in US, but I think that science is so global these days that these skills, I dare to say, they are absolutely important for any scientist in any environment. If you have these skills, you will succeed in any environment. Of course, you have to, a word of caution, these skills are not a substitute for doing good research and publishing and being a productive researcher, writing a good dissertation. So don't think that these skills will give you everything. It's almost like sugarcoating on the most important thing, which is your research. that you are doing with your advisor, with your mentor. Very often, people try to save time in the short run, under the pressure of things. Of course, you are very busy, you don't have enough time, and you think, this is a busy period, you don't have the time to do things. It's like almost like in this joke, the guy is offering them a better way of doing this, but they have no time. There's an anecdote that I remember. When I was in my first year of my doctoral studies, the introductory course of Granger Morgan, the department chair, very good course, he was giving us so many readings. The meeting was once a week, and he gave us 5 papers to read or so. And we were complaining, saying, well, there's so much to read that we don't have the time to do it well. And he showed us a pile of papers on the desk. It was like a pile like this. And he said, I have to read that every day. Or every week, I forgot. But anyway, we were laughing. Ah, yeah. He's trying to justify that he's giving us so much to read. I have to say that that he was actually right. The further you go, the more work there will be. So if you think that you are very, very busy, probably 5 or 10 years from now, you will think about your student times, doctoral student times, as times when you had a lot of time. You had the time to go to the pub, have friends, relationships, etc. You know, it was a wonderful time with a lot of time to spare. That sounds ironic, but you will just learn to become more efficient. You will do things faster. You will organize your life better, but you will be doing more work. So the further you go, typically there is going to be more work. So what are these fundamental skills that we are going to talk about for the rest of the semester? Here is the list that I came up with, and again, how did I come up with them? I just sat down and thought, what do we need? And then during the first definitely few years, I was extending that list, cleaning it up, listening to comments of people. So I came up with a list of 18. There's a funny joke. Again, let me show that short movie. In case you haven't seen it, that's from a movie, History of the World, by Mel Brooks. Mel Brooks is a...
Moses went to the mountain, and God spoke unto him. Moses, this is the Lord thy God, commanding you to obey my law. Do you hear me?
Yes, I hear you. Definitely.
What?
Nothing is going to keep it together.
It's a comedy, of course. That's Mel Brooks, by the way, the director.
Lord, I shall give these laws unto thy people. Hear me. Oh, hear me. All pay heed. The Lord Jehovah, has given unto you these 15. Ten commandments for all to obey.
The comedy is quite wild, and I like this joke. I hope nobody is insulted here. Of course, it's just a joke. But that's a joke about people having a very round number of things. 10 important things, 7 important things, etc. So I have 18. And I do dare to say that these are the things that you need to learn how to do, because they will advance your career very effectively. None of these things is subject of any course in your studies. These are things that you have to learn yourself by looking at other people. Typically, your advisor, but also other people. You don't feel restricted to your advisor. So Let me, okay, here is what we are going to talk about, the blue things. I used to teach this course there were 30 hours. That was typically one semester long, 30 hours. And when we introduced this course in the doctoral program at Białystok University of Technology, we limited it to 20 hours. There is talking about limiting it to 10 hours, I think. I don't know what that will mean. I will have to really pick among things that I do to still limit. So the light blue are things that we are not going to talk about. The darker blue are things that we are going to talk about in this course. These are topics of individual meetings. I think there are more than 10, but some of them can be combined and talked about jointly, like balancing your life between work and family and coping with stress. That's the one thing, really. So how does science work and what is research? The idea here is you need to kind of understand the rules of the game. How can you play a game without understanding the rules? It's impossible. I have an anecdote about this. When I was still in high school, I think, we were trying to fool our colleagues by sitting with three of us with cards and then playing a game that we called Żużel dookoła. We invented that name. And then we were, you know, giving cards, and we were inventing the rules as we went. So one of us said, "Oh, I'm taking because I have a jack and jack of spades. That takes everything, right?" And we were playing and inventing the rules. And people sometimes would come and ask, "What are you playing?" Oh, we said, "Well, we are playing Żużel dookoła." And at some point they said, "Can I play?" "Sure, you can play." So they would join us. And we would keep fooling around. And when they did something, we said, no, you cannot do that. Or, you can do it. And very often they didn't realize that we were just having fun, that we are making fun of them. If you don't understand the rules, how can you play, essentially? It's a funny situation. So you need to understand how science works. We are going to talk about this next week and about the most important mechanisms working in science. You will understand, you know some of them, maybe you know all of them, but it's still good to have it just, open and say. And by the way, I have it on a later slide. You need to realize that many of you actually will find parts of this seminar obvious or boring. You've had it. So treat it in the following way. I often tell it to students, my advisees. If there is one useful thing that you will learn in a meeting like this, just one useful thing, then you have not wasted 1.5 hours of the meeting. Because you will use that skill for the rest of your career. So look for those good ideas. And don't get frustrated from the fact that 80 or 90% of the things that I'm talking about are obvious or you know them already. Be patient. Look for those things that you don't know. That's very typical. A good friend of mine wrote a book. He did it out of... he wanted to help other people because he doesn't need money. He has a lot of money. He wrote a book, Advices for Winners. The book praises talking to other people to seek advice. He is also a scientist, by the way, also as a doctorate. And in the book he says one very funny thing. Suppose I know 1,000 things, and this person here, whoever, maybe she is or he is cleaning in our building, doesn't have a very good education, knows only 100 things. I know 1,000. There is a very good chance that among the 100 things that this person knows, there are two things that I don't know. So the idea is to fish out those two things that you learn. Another advice that I would like to give you, I don't think my friend writes that, but that's my observation. When you talk to other people, some people, there's a saying, I think one of the Polish aphorisms written by Stanisław Jerzylec or whoever, he wrote something like this. I don't want to spoil it. People who are egoists, who are so selfish, talk in the first person. So I, etc. The gossipers, plotkarze, talk in the third person. So oni did something, right? These are the gossipers. The born speakers, maybe born politicians and people who are liked and achieve success, talk in the second person, you. It's an interesting thing. I have something similar. Whenever I meet a new person and I don't know the person yet, very quickly I like to find out what the person knows. And then I like to talk about things that person knows well. Just in February we had a short vacation and the husband of a friend of my wife turned out to be a wine taster. I know a lot about wine tasting, certifications, because it was an interesting conversation. Probably he loved talking about this, and I learned a lot of things about how it works in Portugal, by the way. It was Portugal, and they make a lot of wine. So it's a good idea to learn from other people. In the context, I'm saying that in the context of those one, two, three things that you will learn in every meeting. So look for them. Don't get upset, bored about the things that you already knew. So the rules of the game. There's going to be a lecture that is actually not a lecture. It's a movie. It's a documentary that I will ask you to watch. Last year it was still on YouTube. If I find it, I'll send you the link. If I don't find it, I have it downloaded so I can make it available to you from my cloud storage. It's a 1 hour long documentary about the discovery of fullerenes, Buckminster fullerenes. You know what it is? That's a new form of carbon. Carbon is one of the most important elements in nature. We know at least two forms of carbon. You know, carbon that we use to burn, maybe it's also in the wood. We know diamond. We know graphite also, pure carbon actually, graphite and diamond. But there is actually a third form of carbon. Buckminster fullerenes, the name honors a famous architect, Buckminster Fuller. It's also a pure form of carbon that is bonded in a certain way. That was discovered in 1980s, I think, and the movie is about the physicists who discovered that. You will see a lot of elements of how science works. So you watch that movie, and I will try to point out things that I observed in that movie that you should pay attention to. How they work, how they publish, where they publish, how they got the money from. A lot of important mechanisms in science. So that's the first meeting. Then, the next one is about identifying research problems. Initially, at your stage of your development, your advisor will tell you how to find a topic. Maybe the advisor will tell you, why don't you work on this? And it's very difficult at this stage of your development to come up with ideas. I mean, this stage, what I mean is the first 1 or 2 years. It's difficult to come up with ideas. Not impossible at all, but it's hard. Eventually, when you are approaching the end of your studies, when you will become independent, you will start working alone, you need to have that skill of finding research topics. And it's a very difficult thing. If everybody knew how to do it, there would be a lot of good ideas, good papers, and a lot of research. Some people know how to do it, some people don't know how to do it. And it's one of those very difficult skills. So what I can offer you here is some heuristics. What I learned from my advisors, how did they find topics? Especially one of my advisors, Herb Simon, he actually gave a lecture on finding research topics to doctoral students in computer science department at Carnegie Mellon. I think I loved that lecture. I listened to it a few times. Every time he gave it, I wanted to be there. So I condensed it for you, and I'm going to tell you about this. So it's just one way of doing this. Not the way, but I'll tell you the reasons why the mechanisms in that way work very nicely. So to sum up, when you are independent, when you are a researcher, you need to know how to find topics. It's an absolutely important skill. Without it, you don't know what to work on. Right? In the beginning, it's okay. Your advisor will guide you. You will suggest things. But you need to learn from your advisor and from other sources how to do it. Writing papers. I guess you've probably learned a lot about this already. Maybe you've followed classes, courses. I think in this program there is also a course on writing, isn't there? So you'll spend probably several meetings on the topic of writing. You can probably find lectures online about scientific writing. What I will do here is going to be just one meeting. Is tell you about the things that I learned. Very often, the things that I learned are kept secret. Like, I learned it, why would I show it to the other people? But in this environment, people love to share, so I love to share. I'm approaching the end of my career, so it's unimportant for me. I want to be proud of you. I want to be able to say, she got Nobel Prize, she was in my class. I want like to say that. That's my reward going to be. So few people are born writers, especially if you are in a technical university. That means that you don't have this. Most of you will not have this humanist inclination, beautiful writing. But trust me, you can learn how to write well. It's a skill, and you can learn it, and you should learn it as soon as possible. Because if you don't write, how will people know what you have done, how good you are? Presentation, it's another of those skills. It's a very inexpensive way of advertising your work. And you need to advertise your work. Otherwise, how will people know that you are good, that you have done good work? Why do people need to know that you are good? Well, they will be reviewing your papers. They'll get a paper from Justyna Kowalska. I hope there is no one with that name here. And they will think, oh, I know her. I read other papers. She's good. Now, that thought in the reviewer's mind will increase the probability of a good review. They will try to understand, because they know that Kowalska is a good writer, good scientist, so they will not be inclined to start criticizing. When you apply for money, money is very important in science. You all are getting stipend. Somebody got that money here, right? The management of the university got the money to pay your stipends. When you are a professor, you will have grants. You can pay your programmer, your lab workers, maybe your PhD students. You can buy computers, you can spend the money on travel to conferences. Money is important. If you are known, if people think you are good, they are going to be more inclined to give you money. What I'm saying, it's a mechanism that works everywhere in the world the same way. Everywhere, really. It's good to be known. So you can advertise your work very easily. It doesn't take much work. Just prepare a few slides. If you know how to present well, you will really advertise your work very nicely. So we are going to talk about presentations. I'll have a set of slides, one meeting on that. Funding, we are not going to talk about this, but because of the conciseness of the course, It's very similar to writing research grant proposals, wnioski o grant in Polish, similar to writing papers. But there are certain things that are different here. So that's what I was talking about here. Again, we are not going to talk about it, but you need to learn how to do it also. People expect you to get money for research. Reviewing, I think we are not going to talk about this either. I'm going to say a few things about this topic in the context of writing papers. We are going to mention the review process, so a little bit about that, but not the topic. You will start reviewing the moment you start publishing. The moment you publish a few papers, editors of journals, of conferences will send you emails asking, would you please review this paper? Sometimes the advisor, if you have a good advisor, they will ask you to review a paper. When you are advanced, the student already in the third, fourth year, they will get papers to review themselves and they will know that this is in the area of your specialty. They may actually ask you to review a paper. So you will do it quite soon. I would think 3-4 years from now, maybe 5, whatever, it may differ. Reviewing each other's work, which you should do if you have colleagues. You should actually get their papers and read and comment them. It's a good preparation for that process in the later. Constructive criticism is a good idea that benefits the authors. So you should learn how to criticize in a constructive way. Teaching, again, we are not going to talk about this in this seminar, too little time, but it's also something that most of you will have to learn. Not all of you, but most of you will work in academic environments. There's many things that you can do with a PhD, but in Poland, probably most PhD graduates end up in universities. So you will be asked to teach. And that's it's an interesting thing because nobody taught me how to teach. When I got a job as a professor, I had to essentially improvise based on my experiences with classes. I didn't know how to teach. I had to learn it. So in that presentation, which I'm not going to give in this seminar, it's really some of the things that I learned, discovered the hard way, things that might help you with teaching. Guiding students, running a lab, managing projects. Nobody teaches you how to be a manager. But the moment you are a professor later, I don't mean professor in the Polish sense, but I mean when you have a PhD and work and teach and have people working with you, master's students or later PhD students, you will need to manage them. You need to be a boss. And nobody teaches us how to be a boss, how to run a lab. So that is about running a lab. I think I have we have a meeting on this topic. Creativity, we are going to talk about it definitely. It's it turns out that creativity is not something that you are born with. If you think that you are not creative because you were born that way, that's not a very good way of thinking. Some people may be more creative than others, but creativity is a skill that you can stimulate, that you can improve. So I'm going to talk about simple things, simple tricks that will make you more creative. Whatever your creativity is, you can become more creative. And creativity is very important because choosing a topic that is interesting, you will not do more work than working on a boring topic. You will do the same amount of work. But interesting topic that you came up with, it's essentially much better for you because people will read your papers more gladly. They will love to read your papers. The topics will be interesting. Creativity is a very important skill. Again, it's not taught anywhere in universities, maybe psychology departments where they are interested in the processes of creativity. And that is not worth a whole class, but we are not going to talk about it either. information finding, I may mention it here and there, but this is something that you need to figure out yourself. These days, finding information is not that difficult. Most of the things are on the web. You can find it. It used to be called library work. People went to the library to find papers. This is an important topic, and we are going to have it quite early in the semester. Career planning. How do we... you need to plan. You need to know where you are going. Of course, that planning doesn't have to be very concrete. It's not like, you know, I'm planning to be the rector of Jagiellonian University by the year 2032. Right. Not that type of planning, because that's too concrete. But you can have, you still should have an idea of what you want to do. Where do you want to be 10, 20 years from now? Do you want to be at a university? Do you want to be in the industry? If you want to be at a university, what steps do you need to take to get there, to become a professor in the Polish sense, you know, habilitacja and then professor. So in this topic, there is a very good lecture that I will also make available to you. Probably will send you a link to my to the copy of that in the cloud, and you will you should listen to that lecture before the meeting. I'm going to talk just about elements of that lecture. I was lucky to be in the audience during that lecture, and I was actually quite impressed. I was still very young. I was it was my first few years of my work at the university, and I loved it. I actually went to the guy to talk with him also. I think he has several interesting things to say. I may not agree with every one of those things, but several things are really very good. So I will ask you to listen to that. Unfortunately, that lecture doesn't have subtitling. It's in English with no subtitling. And the recording is not the highest quality. And his pronunciation is not terrific. So it's going to be a little bit of a challenge. But you should still give it a try. And I will try to fish out the most important things from there. If you don't know where you are going, how will you know that you got there? Everything will seem to be a success, right? So you need to have an idea of where you want to go. And if you have that idea, then the steps that you need to take to get there. Many people say things, it would be nice to be wealthy. It would be nice. But how do you get there? How can you become wealthy? There are probably many recipes. There was an ambassador of the United States to Poland, Mosbacher, I think, during the first term of Donald Trump. She wrote a few books, and one of the books was about how to become wealthy. You just marry a wealthy man. Well, that's one way. There are probably several ways, but if you know, just dreaming about being wealthy, that's not enough. You need to find out how to get there. You know, what steps you take. One way of becoming wealthy is to start a company. Well, to start a company, you need to have an idea. Right? When you have an idea, how do you get from an idea to commercializing it, etc.? You need to learn the steps, and then, if you want to get somewhere, you learn the steps. You make the first step. You do something. That's essentially what the career planning is. It doesn't mean that the very concrete thing, but at least, you know, roughly, you need to know where you're going. So that's the meeting. No special meeting on this topic, interacting with other people and networking, but this is a very, very important skill. You need to get to know a lot of people, and you need to treat them as colleagues. You need to be good to them. Because your life is going to become, as a scientist, is going to become easier. In what way is it going to become easier? In Poland, that's probably the remains of the communist times that are still, you know, it will take a generation or two to kind of get rid of those things. There is this idea that you do something because you know people. poznajomości. I don't mean anything of that sort. I mean having a network of colleagues, of friends, in a very positive sense, in a very ethical sense. How can I benefit from having friends, colleagues? Many ways as a scientist. For example, suppose you are looking for a job. And they have an opening at Jagiellonian University. And they put an announcement, we are looking for a person with a PhD in this and this area of research. And suppose you feel, well, my area fits there. If you have a friend at the Jagiellonian University, I would immediately call that person or send email, schedule a meeting on the phone so that they can speak easier, and I would ask, can you tell me more about this? Who are you looking for? Right? What exactly is, because the description is so cryptic, can you tell me more about this? What else can you do? When I was looking for a job, right after my PhD, it was a very bad situation. The national average of applicants was around 150 per opening. Very difficult situation. 150 applicants, one gets a job. And I couldn't go anywhere outside of Pittsburgh. I had to be in Pittsburgh. And there were two openings at that time. One I didn't fit too well, really. And the other one I thought, well, that's a good fit. I need to get that job. I did everything I could. I used the Japanese way. The Japanese way is best explained by an anecdote. You've seen some martial arts. So there is a teacher, a master, teaching a student to shoot a bow. Wook, bow. So the student is aiming to the arrow and shooting the target. Target is the name in English of that thing. And then the student is keeping a second arrow in his left hand. So he's holding the bow and the second arrow. So the master comes to him, like the one in this comedy, hits him in the head and says, "You idiot, you novice, never hold the second arrow while shooting the first one, because you will trust the second arrow and you will release the first arrow too lightheartedly. So act as if this was the only arrow, right? Don't hold the second arrow." So, of course, it's always good to have a fallback plan, but whatever you do, do it so well that you don't need that fallback plan. So I couldn't afford to have a fallback plan because that was the only opening. So I had a friend who graduated from the same department that I was graduating from, that I graduated from at that time. And I told him I was applying in his department. He gave me a copy of a department brochure with the people working there. It was the time before internet. It was 1993. There were no web pages with pictures and descriptions and papers. So he gave me a printed version of that thing. Was it unethical? No. That thing was open. If it was printed, you could go there and get it. Yes. But I wouldn't even know about it. So he gave me that. I had a booklet with all the photographs, names, education and research interest of every faculty there. So when I went for my job interview, it takes a whole day. You have meetings with different people, you have a lecture there. The evening before, they take you out to dinner to observe you also, of course. So when I went there, I introduced myself to different people, heard the name. I'm not very good at remembering name, not very fast, if I don't make a real effort. But when I went there, I knew all the names and faces, of course. I had that brochure for a few weeks. I just learned it. So I spoke to somebody, and then during the coffee break or something, I said, "Well, you know, Roger, I read your paper, the one that you published in whatever journal was. I have a question about this." "Now, what happens then?" "Roger, you should look a little proud. I noticed his work, right? Scientists are, of course, very... scientists are people. And people have vanity over them. You know that. Próżność. People have the sin of vanity. Is it unethical to use that against them? No, I don't think so. In every negotiation, you should take into account people's character, people's weaknesses. Please note what is happening. Trump is a very interesting person, I would say, but he is so often doing all kinds of negotiation tricks, trying to abuse, to push people, etc., all kinds of things. He is doing too much, to my taste, definitely. But definitely, you know, knowing the environment and then using it to your benefit, it's as long as you act ethically. Was it unethical to read Roger's paper? I read it, I looked at it. Was it unethical? I don't think so. I went to the library, found that paper, and read it. Was it unethical to ask a question about that paper? No. Was it unethical to make Roger feel good, and maybe Roger voted about whom we are going to hire later, right? That's, so things like that. So this is an example of how you can benefit from having colleagues and friends. Another example, I'm working on a paper, and I need to have, I'm stumbling against a mathematical problem. What do I do? Oh, I have a friend who is working in the mathematics department. I call him or send him an email. Well, can you tell me who worked on that problem? Maybe can you give me a few literature pointers that I should read to work on this problem? Good example. That saves me a lot of work, a lot of time, because a colleague knows much better the field than I do. Other examples. I need to practice my skill of presentation. You should practice your skill of presentation. And you are going to Krakow on a short vacation with your girlfriend, boyfriend, wife, husband. And you think, wow, wouldn't it be nice to give a talk at Jagiellonian University? Well, you send email to a friend that you met at a conference and say, hey, Janusz, I'm going to be in Krakow 25th of May and the weekend after that. Wouldn't it be nice to have coffee or something? You just mentioned that you are going there. What should Janusz answer? Wonderful. Can you come to our department or group and give tell us something about your work? Give a talk about your work. What should you answer? I'll be pleased to. Yes? That's another example of having friends, essentially, acquaintances and friends, colleagues. So whenever you are at a conference, whenever you are queuing up for coffee, you know, being like this next to another person, that's a very bad idea. How should you act? Hi, I'm Marek. Where are you from? Which university are you from? Oh, I'm from this university. Oh, that's interesting. I've been to Olsztyn and etc. You make a conversation. What are you working on? That's the next question. What are you working on? And vice versa. You need to be prepared to answer the question also, what you are working on. That's a way you make colleagues. You don't even need to exchange emails. As long as you remember the name, and they have usually names at the conferences, you can read that, you can find their emails these days easily. So when you go to Olsztyn, you just send them an email or, you know. And when you know what they are working on, you know what you could ask them when you need that. So doing everything, looking for jobs, needing help in your research, the colleagues are always very, very good. So please know that I don't mean anything unethical by that. What I'm saying you works this way everywhere in the world. It's good to have colleagues. It's good to have a network. If you read the original report of Witold Pilecki, I don't know if you have ever read it, you can find it on the web. He is describing essentially in a very military way his two or three years in Auschwitz camp. It's really shocking, the report, because he's writing matter-of-factly in a military report what his experiences were. Several times he was almost dead. The only way he survived was that he had a network of people, friends, who saved him. Him, he was very strong. So having friends is a good idea, and you should act in such a way that you have friends. Another thing is look around, because this room is full of your future colleagues and friends. Get to know as many people as you can, because even if they are in a different department, so what? Maybe you will need a computer scientist or a mechanical engineer or electrical engineer in your research work. So make colleagues, make friends as much as you can. Be good to people also. That's another thing. This is all about that. No special meeting on that topic. Just pay attention to that in your work. You need to learn. If you are a very shy person, it's going to be difficult for you, but start working on it. It's very easy, really, to come and say, hi, I'm Marek. So easy, right? And then asking what you're doing, where you're from, people actually like talking about themselves. So if you ask them, they will gladly answer you. And then people are very different. I remember once I went to a conference in Poland. It was, I think, Mrągowo, somewhere in the year. And, you know, there was a lunch, you know, I picked my lunch, sat at the table, there were three or four people there. It's a good idea to sit at a table where you don't know anybody, generally, because you will get to know other people. Of course, don't neglect your other friends. So, you know, I don't mean, you know, you meet somebody, write them down, and then go somewhere else. No, I don't mean that. I'm not that. But anyway, I sat down and I asked them, hello, where are you from? They looked like that. Maybe they answered something, but they kept talking with each other. They knew each other very well. Essentially, I felt not very welcome there. Of course, I had my lunch and went somewhere else, but that was a very, very, not only rude behavior, but also very unwise behavior on their part. Very unwise. So if they do that, okay, that's their business, but don't ever do that. Job hunt, we are not going to talk about this, but there are things that you should also learn to do. Depending on the country, there are different ways of looking for people. Let's start with the fact that everybody who has any brain is looking for the best people they can get. If they are looking for buddies, for friends, that place is never going to be good. They're looking for the best people. And depending, of course, on the environment, on the country, there are different ways of applying for jobs. I would say that what I saw in US and also in some other countries, it's very popular. The most popular way is you prepare a package, application package, which is your vita, curriculum vita, your statement of research interests. Maybe you give some samples of your papers, of your work. Maybe give a few references that they can ask about, so people who can vouch for you, write letters for you. It's actually a procedure. When they invite you, you come there with a visit. Usually you spend the whole day, talk to different people, you have a lecture, etc. This is the way that academics are searched, hired. What I notice here in Białystok is, I would say, very often funny. Because an announcement, we are looking for somebody, is very often written with somebody in mind already. They have somebody they want to hire, and they are writing an advertisement. A place like this will never get a chance to become better. Because think about this. As a boss, you should look for people who are very good, who are better than you. You want to attract the best people, the best talent. If you are looking for people among the people you want to hire, maybe they are very good, but you are not giving a chance for the place to develop. Anyway, a job hunt is an important skill. How do you get the job? How do you win among 150 people who are applying? How do you get the job? There are some tricks that can be used here. we can, not a special meeting, but maybe somewhere we can talk about it. I'm approaching the end, so let's speed up a little. I'm going to talk about a really important thing, balancing your life between work and family. If you think that scientists are happy ever after, then you are wrong. The rate of divorce among scientists is definitely not lower than in the general population, maybe even higher. People who are working hard have the tendency to neglect their family, their personal life. So we have a problem here, and you cannot just, you know, jump into a lot of work, and you have to work hard as a scientist without paying attention to that. Another thing is stress, deadlines, a lot of work, having to work 80 hours a week, a lot of stress. So how do you deal with that? I'm going to give you some of the things that I have found and developed in these two areas, coping with stress especially, but that also has to do with personal life. Ethics, that's going to be the last meeting. Ethics can be talked about in a very boring way, you know, don't do this, don't do that. I'm going to talk about it in more kind of high-level thing, about the things that that we have, that's our duty as scientists. The general idea is, the higher you are in the social ladder, the more you have, the more duties you have. There's a French saying, still said and believed, noblesse oblige. You know that? Nobility has obligations. So if you are a nobleman, a marquis or whatever, you have the duty to take care of the less privileged parts of the society. If you are educated, like you are going to be even better educated in a few years from now, you have primarily obligations, duties. And we need to realize that. Duties like, you know, you don't pick your nose because there's a doctor and picking the nose, no, that's something is wrong with that, right? So, and there are some, in Poland it's actually quite unique. There is a text you say, you kind of promise as a doctor to be good, to be ethical and good. That's quite unique. I don't recall that when I was finishing my PhD at University of Pittsburgh. That's interesting. That's it. Quality rather than quantity. People expect us to produce a few things, but of high quality, rather than many. The rules are working against that. The rules are collect points. But it's actually more important to, if you want to become famous, people spelling your name correctly, you produce quality stuff. Fewer, but higher quality. Fewer papers, but for 300 points. Not the 20, 30, many of them. Okay, just a few slides. Is there anything else? If you think of anything else in the course of the semester, let me know. There will be the slides. You can find them online. There is a way of finding, if you look for me, I can actually send you an email with that, where you find the materials. That's probably the best thing. I can send you an email through the USOS. If there are any readings, I'll let you know. AV materials, I'll send you links or tell you where to find them. Just to summarize, you are smart, no doubt about this. You made it to the doctoral programs. You are hardworking. If you didn't work hard, you wouldn't be here. You have developed your own ways of being successful, but I actually said all of these things already. If you find a couple of things in every meeting that you will learn, it's going to be very useful. The earlier you adopt them, the better. This is a very kind of simple curve of the role of early investment. You invest the same amount of money, $5,000 a year, for 10 years. If you start at the age of 25, there's a compound interest, the money brings more money, you're going to be there. If you start at the age of 55, you're going to be there. The earlier you learn something and start using it, the better for you. Very important slide, very important idea. So, I'm out of time. I think I talked about most of the things here already. So, let me stop. There is a presence, at least we have 10 meetings. I allow 2 absences. And they are absolute absences. So please keep them for the special occasions like disease, you know, wedding in the family or something. I should have put that earlier. Somewhere there, put your name next to your name so that I know that you are there. Any questions? Okay,
Do you also send links to presentations which will not be on the lectures?
If I have any presentations that I'm not going to use, yes? I could definitely share them with you, of course, if you wanted to.
You showed the six themes?
The things that I'm not going to talk about. Yes, I'll be happy to. I haven't looked at them for a while, but I'll be happy to. So, okay, thank you very much. I guess that's it. So just make sure to sign your name somewhere and...